Now from the KSFR newsroom, at noon looks at the top local news headlines for this Tuesday, October 22nd.
Wednesday morning, we'll see both supporters and opponents of marriage equality gather en masse at the state Supreme Court building in Santa Fe. The court will be hearing oral arguments as they've been asked by all 33 New Mexico County clerks to rule on the constitutionality of same-sex marriage. Supporters, including Equality New Mexico and the Human Rights Campaign, are hosting a 7:30 a.m. I Do Donuts and Coffee at the court on Don Gaspar. Christian opponents, under the banner of the Traditional Values Advocacy Committee, are calling for public prayer against marriage equality. Meantime, the court is preparing to handle the expected large turnout by providing overflow areas where people can follow the proceedings. Santa Fe Mayor David Koss delivers his eighth and final State of the City address this evening. A 5 p.m. event at the Community Convention Center will hear Koss address the current state of affairs, as well as noting accomplishments during his two terms in office.
I'm very, very proud of this city. I think it's a world-class city, and there's a lot to talk about of how we supported equal rights, immigrants, living wage, bringing our river back, addressing climate change and doing more renewable energy. And most of all, just thanking so many workers, businesses, community groups. I remember Mayor Delgado saying, mayors just can't say thank you enough. And I found that to be very true.
Koss announced earlier this year he would not seek a third term in the upcoming March 24 municipal election. Santa Fe's police chief, Ray Riel, says some officers could be using sick leave to oppose the force's move back to an 8-hour, 5-day work shift. Until mid-2011, officers had worked 10-hour, 4-day shifts. The new change is credited with saving overtime costs and helping to blunt crime. The new schedule, though, is not popular with the police union. At Monday's Santa Fe Finance Committee meeting, Chief Riel says a recent 30% uptick in sick leave is likely intentional and a form of protest. State Senator Jerry Ortiz Pino calls the audit of New Mexico behavioral health providers released last week by the Attorney General useless. The Albuquerque Democrat says most of the now-displaced New Mexico providers are out of business as a result of the audit. And Ortiz Pino says recent comments by the chief of an Arizona replacement firm raises questions.
One of the things he said is that they had first been contacted at Thanksgiving of last year, several months before the state had admitted to ever contacting Arizona companies to come in, and 3 full months before they ever let the contract to do the audit.
Ortiz Pino tells KSFR he plans to raise the issue with the Human Services Department at a legislative committee hearing in Santa Fe next month. The folks wanting to redevelop Santa Fe's Eastside Manderfield School have recommitted to the purchase from Santa Fe Public Schools and have altered their plans for use. Claire and Michael Marist had originally wanted to create residential units along with artist studios and a small cafe. Those plans were met with stiff opposition from the local neighborhood association. At last night's school board meeting, an amended deal was made that concurs with current zoning, which allows for only residential development. The deal is set to close by January 10th. Santa Fe County is calling attention to unwanted prescription drugs at a turn-in drive this Saturday. The county is partnering with multiple regional law enforcement agencies as well as the Drug Enforcement Agency. The intent is to provide prescription drug abuse by collecting potentially dangerous, expired, unused, and unwanted pharmaceuticals. In Santa Fe proper, Albertson's grocery stores at DeVarga Center and on Zafferano will serve as anonymous disposal locations. Governor Susana Martinez is among those moderating a breast cancer panel discussion today at the UNM Cancer Center in Albuquerque. A number of healthcare professionals considered breast care experts in our state will focus on research, screening, diagnosis, and prevention. Breast cancer cases constitute 1/3 of all cancer diagnoses in women in New Mexico. The Santa Fe National Forest has announced some 6 prescribed burns they plan to undertake in coming days. Start times will vary and may be adjusted according to weather. In all, about 1,000 acres of woodland slash will be burned to reduce the risk of controlled wildfires. 120 acres in the Santa Fe watershed are to be treated beginning October 29th. Weather for Santa Fe, sunny and dry through Thursday with highs in the low to mid-60s and overnight lows in the low 30s. A system with a 30% chance for thundershowers is set to arrive on Friday. I'm Tom Trowbridge, KSFR News.
Thank you, Tom. And taking a look at Wall Street at midday, all the major indices in positive territory at this hour. The Dow currently up 62 points at 15,454, the NASDAQ up 6 at 3,926, and the S&P 500 is up 9. It stands at 1,754. At noon on KSFR, we'll continue in just a moment.
Support comes from New Mexico Educators Federal Credit Union, where the more you participate in your not-for-profit financial cooperative, the more money you earn. For details on Earn Your Return, go to nmefcu.org or visit their branch on St. Michael's Drive.
10 minutes past the hour, as At Noon now segues to today's feature stories. All eyes will be on New Mexico's Supreme Court tomorrow as justices hear arguments both for and against the constitutionality of marriage equality in our state. The matter arrives at the High Court after a long, circuitous route. The tipping point came some months ago when some county clerks asserted nothing in our state constitution explicitly prohibits same-sex marriage. That was later reasserted by a lower judge's ruling, which then prompted all 33 of the state's county clerks to ask for a final binding resolution. The ACLU of New Mexico has been a leading proponent for the marriage equality issue. Its executive director, Peter Simonson, joins us now. Peter, describe for us, if you will, the journey that has led to tomorrow's hearing.
Well, it's been a roller coaster ride for literally about the last 3 years for us. This is the culmination of an effort that started with an attempt to persuade the legislature to grant domestic partnership responsibilities and rights to gay and lesbian couples. And when that became clear that that was not going anywhere, that the legislature was not going to step up and make that happen, the conversation turned towards seeking marriage equality, which was really our goal all along. And over the course of about the last 2 years, I suppose, we have been steadily putting together briefs, interviewing possible couples as plaintiffs, and ultimately that resulted in the filing of our lawsuit in March of this year. And many people probably know the different things that have gone on with county clerks unilaterally issuing marriage licenses, some refusing to do so, judges weighing in and forcing counties to issue marriage licenses. And, you know, that brings us to today where, hopefully tomorrow, that is, we will actually see some resolution to this issue, and we will ultimately finally be able to say that New Mexico joins those states that grant the freedom to marry to gay and lesbian couples. And I should just add that I say tomorrow. Tomorrow is when the hearing is taking place. But, of course, it's very unlikely that we'll see a ruling tomorrow. And it's somewhat unpredictable how long it might take till we hear something from the court.
And tomorrow's proceedings are somewhat different from a more standard hearing being sought by a traditional plaintiff, yes? It differs in that it is a request by all county clerks for a writ, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. The counties have intervened in the lawsuit as a way of asking that the high court settle the question and give them clear guidance on what they should be required to do under law. But, of course, it begins with a traditional civil lawsuit that we filed, as I say, in March, in which we were asserting that to deny same-sex couples, loving, committed same-sex couples, the ability to get married, is to violate their equal protection rights and their equal rights under our state constitution. So at the end of the day, there are still basic fundamental constitutional questions that we hope to see answered during the hearing, and that ultimately we'll come away with from this hearing with a ruling that to discriminate against gay and lesbian couples in any way, shape, or form is a violation of our constitutional law.
You and the ACLU playing an active role in tomorrow's proceedings?
Oh, absolutely. No, we will be arguing our case before the court. The Attorney General's office also will be arguing the case before the court, and then on the defense side, I believe that while they file, they're arguing on the basis of an amicus that they've filed, an organization, an out-of-state organization called I believe it's Alliance Defending Freedom, will be arguing in opposition to us, and I know that the counties will be making a statement as well. It's not entirely clear to me where they come down. I believe they're being included on the defense side of the issue, but whether or not that they present an actual argument opposing the granting of marriage licenses is not clear to me.
And what's the timetable for tomorrow's events?
The hearing will begin at 9 o'clock, and it's under our understanding that the hearing will take roughly 2 hours. The justices, I'm sure, will ask a number of questions of both sides, and that will sort of conclude the matter. It'll be pretty simple. I should add that, from my understanding, the court is anticipating quite a crowd outside, out front, and we'll be actually doing some activities out front, just celebrating this momentous day, asking people that support the freedom to marry that they join in the moment with us. I think we'll be serving donuts and coffee out there in the front of the Supreme Courthouse. It's going to be televised or streamed live. We will be holding a viewing party as well over at the Inn at the Governor's for people to actually watch the proceedings as they happen live. So there will be a lot of activity going on throughout the day, all focused on this. And I think particularly in the city of Santa Fe, but statewide, all eyes are going to be on this activity, on this event. It's one of the most momentous things that we've ever been involved in.
Your final thoughts today?
I guess my basic thoughts are these. This is a state that celebrates its diversity, that recognizes that we treat others as we want to be treated, that we have a healthy respect for the family, and not just our own families, but other people's families and their family members. And I don't think any one of us wants to see either our family members or members of other people's families discriminated against or denied, particularly some of the basic freedoms that we are promised under our Constitution. And tomorrow's hearing is going to be all about those very questions, all about those fundamental issues, about how we can form families, the freedom that we have to marry the one we love and to express our love and commitment to one another and have that relationship recognized by our government. So it's going to be an incredibly important day tomorrow, and we look forward to an ultimately positive resolution to the issue.
ACLU of New Mexico Executive Director Peter Simonson, many thanks for joining us here at noon on KSFR, which will continue in just a moment.
El Dorado artists are packing up their magic and bringing it to Santa Fe. Once again, they'll hold their annual Fall Fine Arts and Crafts Show at St. John's United Methodist Church on Old Pecos Trail at Cordova. Over 40 artists will show work in a multitude of genres, including painting, ceramics, glass, photography, handcrafted jewelry, folk art, and much more. The show runs Friday, October 25th from 3 to 7 and continues Saturday, the 26th from 9 to 5. More at eldoradoarts.org, a message from the tax-exempt El Dorado Arts and Crafts Association.
18 minutes past the hour as At Noon continues. A newly released report states that there's been an increase in venture capital dollars flowing to New Mexico companies. Venture capital is money available to companies to help them both expand and grow. Of interest is not just the fact that these funds are being made available in the state, but also to what types of businesses that are now eligible for them. Joining us now is John Chavez, who has been working with venture capital for a year. John, tell us about these funds.
The amounts that are coming in are actually about half of what are articulated in the National Venture Capital Reports. Because you have a lot of private equity and venture capitalists that don't promote what they do within the state of New Mexico, you're seeing, from last year, you're seeing a growth. You're also seeing a growth in earlier stage deals that early-stage venture capitalists in New Mexico are putting into play.
What types of companies are eligible for the money? Can they be startup businesses, or do they have to be already established?
In order to get any type of financing, you actually have to be up and running. But sometimes we just funded a company here that had two employees. We just recently funded a company down in Deming, New Mexico, that had 15 employees. And so you do have to have something that the venture capitalist can see, the angel investor can see, they can touch, feel, meet the people involved, and see if it's a real opportunity. You think about the life cycle of a company. So the first stage of an early stage technology company is seed investors. And they don't put a lot of money out into those deals because it's the most riskiest time of a company. And then as you drive through product development and market acceptance of a product and actually creating a product, then you can go out and raise additional dollars from the venture capitalist along with angels. And then as you start getting traction to go to market with a big push, those are the later stage fundings that bring in $10 to $15 million, but there's a product, there's a company, there's sales, and all you're doing is trying to boost that company up and so that it can really go into the stratosphere in regards to sales.
You've mentioned the term angels several times. What is the difference between an angel and a venture capitalist?
Angels are the most, they take the most risk in these deals. And so an angel investor is typically investing his own money. And venture capitalists, what they provide is they provide a pool of capital that they've raised from high wealth individuals, pension funds, endowment funds. And so while they take a certain amount of risk, they want to have a deal that's a little bit more robust than what angels see.
John, given that the economy overall has had a tough time, and taking into account the recent government shutdown, are you surprised to see that increased funds are available?
No. I mean, I think that there's a lot of cash on the sidelines because there is not a sufficient return. And so what you're seeing riskier investors do is put money into riskier deals because they expect a return. But given the other asset classes that are out there, bonds and stocks have done real well, but bonds have done horribly, and you can't get any interest rate from a savings account. So there's a lot of activity in this small company ecosystem, and New Mexico has a very strong ecosystem that where there's lots of good things going on, lots of technology transfer going on. And so I've expected this for a while.
We know that here in New Mexico, we're uniquely situated to produce solar and wind power. Are these alternative energy companies receiving some of the venture capital monies?
What you're seeing in the marketplace is that getting funded in New Mexico right now are biotech, material science, and internet applications and software. You're not seeing a lot of investments into alternative energy because the marketplace has changed. There's a lot of demand for the energy, but it's hard to make money in alternative energy.
And looking ahead, how do you see New Mexico businesses faring in the future?
Well, I think if you look at the numbers from the angels, the New Mexico angels, last year was our best year in putting money in. And also we had some significant activity on getting money out from our previous investments, and that's why you do it. This year it looks like we're going to be on tack for our best year ever as far as putting money into companies. And that can just roll into next year. I think the economy is growing. I think people are recognizing that government isn't the be-all, that the private economy is a place to be. And next year you're going to see some substantial growth both in the just the general economy but also in the stock market. So I'm very optimistic about the small company ecosystem in New Mexico, and I continue to make investments in it because there's going to be some good returns.
John Chavez, many thanks for joining us here at noon on KSFR.
The Lensic proudly presents Lions, Elephants, and Giants, an evening with National Geographic photographer Michael Nick Nichols on Tuesday, October 22nd at 7 p.m. Nichols will discuss his award-winning work with African wildlife and his new book, Earth to Sky. For tickets to see photographer Nick Nichols on October 22nd, call 988-1234 or visit TicketSantaFe.org. The Lenzic is a nonprofit member-supported organization.
24 minutes past the hour as At Noon continues. Water conservation, that's an issue we give much attention to. Now there is a chance for Santa Fe youngsters to get involved. Here is KSFR News reporter Charles Maynard with the story.
Water conservation has long been a major issue in Santa Fe. As a city, we've been improving our efforts in this vital area. Lori Treviso is the water conservation manager for Santa Fe.
Here in Santa Fe, with our water conservation efforts, I think we're doing a really good job. I actually had gone to a conference in Las Vegas last month, and this was a conference on water conservation for all different municipalities, and I was actually calling it the Super Bowl of water conservation. So it was really nice to sit in and listen to other municipalities and where they're at with their programs. And what I realized was that we're really far ahead of the game. So I got a chance to sit in with the city of Boulder and the city of Austin and towns that are really somewhat progressive with a lot of their land use policies, sustainability efforts, those kinds of things. And actually, they're implementing programs that we did 10 years ago. So we've come a ways, or in other municipalities are just now trying to implement those kinds of programs. So I'm really proud of the job that our community has done. And I'm really proud of the effort that, and the programs that are here in Santa Fe.
There's a contest for Santa Fe students to help get them involved in the conservation effort.
We've done this poster contest for 11 years, and so that's kind of what I'm talking about is that, you know, we're doing poster contests, other programs. This is the 11th year for our annual Children's Water Conservation Poster Contest. This year we're moving it to the fall because we have a cooperative effort with the Santa Fe Public Schools, and they were the ones that had suggested that it might be better for, we might get better participation and it's better for the teachers if we go ahead and move it to the fall. Typically we do this in the spring. But what it is that we invite grades, first grade through the sixth grade, all students to participate, and we have a theme each year for our poster contest. And this year's theme is Saving Water is Always in Season. We wanted to focus on sort of seasonality of, because we've moved it to the fall, the seasonality of water conservation. They can go into to messages such as, you know, what do you do in the winter to save water? Or, I mean, it can be much more complex as to how much snowpack will affect our water usage. So we've given the teachers teaching guides to go ahead and work on those programs with their students. And we talk about drought, and we talk about other weather-related events. And as you know, this past season has been a really roller coaster of weather-related events. We started the year in a deficit and in a drought, and then here we are in the middle of the fall, and we've had some really wet weather. The posters are due November 22nd, and then we will actually judge them in January. There will be a ceremony for all of the winners. And then what we'll do is in the 2015 calendar, we'll put all of the winning images into a calendar that goes out in 2015.
Lori Treviso of the City of Santa Fe.
If there's a student that's interested, it's open to Santa Fe Public Schools, charter schools, private schools, and homeschool students. You can go to our website at www.santafenm.gov/water conservation. And all of the entry forms, the curriculum, and the guidelines will be on that website.
For KSFR News, I'm Charles Maynard.
Support comes from Mountain Cloud Zen Center in Santa Fe, where there's no need to don robes or shave heads. The miracle of everyday life. That's where real awakening happens, in the midst of ordinary lives. A taste of the deep, clear peace of authentic Zen can be found at Mountain Cloud Zen Center. Thursday night talks and Sunday morning practice with resident Zen teacher Henry Shookman. Everyone always welcome. Learn more at mountaincloud.org.
29 minutes past the hour as At Noon continues. The Legislative Courts, Corrections, and Justice Committee wraps up 2 days of meetings in Grants and Acoma Pueblo today, and one of the panel's agenda items was a report on the use of solitary confinement in New Mexico. Rejoining me now is KSFR's Tom Trowbridge. Tom, in preparation for the story we're about to hear, tell us about solitary confinement and its use in the U.S.
Yeah, Dan, the practice of imprisoning people in solitary cells without access to any human contact or stimulation as a method of rehabilitation began in the early 1800s. It's been the center of controversy since and the subject of many lawsuits.
And now the issue has come before state lawmakers, yes?
Yeah, and here's my report on a brand new New Mexico study on the topic. The Center on Law and Poverty and the ACLU of New Mexico issued a report on the use of solitary confinement in state prisons and county jails. Gail Evans is the legal director at the New Mexico Center on Law and Poverty. She says the report finds the use of solitary confinement in New Mexico's prisons and jails is overused and underreported.
In the prison system, according to the Department of Corrections, 16% of our prisoners are kept in solitary confinement, which is more than 1,000 people. At the jail here in Bernalillo County, which is the largest jail in the state, according to them, about 300 people are kept in solitary at any one time. And the other jails aren't keeping records, but we did contact every jail in the state and find that every jail uses solitary and that it can be used for months or even years at a time.
Evans says the last time the U.S. Department of Justice studied the use of solitary confinement was 2004, and at that time, New Mexico's use of solitary was second highest in the nation. Evans describes the bleak conditions inmates confined to 8-by-10-foot cells deal with.
They were kept there by themselves all the time, 23 hours a day. 1 hour a day, they were taken out, shackled, and put in a cage outside where they could wander around in the cage for exercise. Then they were shackled and cuffed and taken back to their cell. They ate in their cell. The food is slid through a little slot in the door. There's a very small window in the cell, and there's no social activity, no work activity, no human interaction other than being led in and out of the cell to get to the exercise cage or at times to be taken to a shower.
Evans says there's evidence that holding inmates in solitary confinement, even for a few days, can have lasting psychological impacts.
After 7 days, psychiatrists think that the impact may be irreversible, and it's a lessening in cognitive functioning that comes from being held with no stimulation. For days, months, or at times years on end.
Evans knows this firsthand. She formerly worked as a defense attorney and had a client in the Torrance County Jail in solitary.
I saw him deteriorate. He used to be lying in a fetal position on a metal bed when I would go to see him and try to rouse him. He was held that way for months. I've had clients who've been held that way for years.
Evans, along with a representative from the ACLU, delivered a presentation Monday to the legislature's Crime, Corrections, and Justice Committee.
The question was that we needed to do something about this. The committee was interested and I think concerned, especially about the length of stay of solitary and the amount of inmates that are in solitary confinement.
Evans says the New Mexico Corrections Department is looking at its solitary confinement policies.
Our Corrections Department has recently agreed to work with a national organization called the VERA Institute. VERA came in and audited the use of solitary in the prison and has made recommendations for change. And it's a sort of closed process with the Department of Corrections and the VERA Institute. But the fact that the Department of Corrections is working with them and has agreed to do so gives us some hope that at least in the prisons, there will be a reduction of the use of solitary in our state. The jails is a whole other matter. And we really need to get a handle on how to get some change in the jails.
Gail Evans, legal director at the New Mexico Center on Law and Poverty. The report on solitary confinement is available online at nmpovertylaw.org. For KSFR, I'm Tom Tropridge.
12:34 now here in the KSFR newsroom, just past the bottom of the hour, is the perfect time to spend 60 seconds with our resident curmudgeon, Christopher Hagen.
It amazes me how some public personalities are forgiven for their transgressions and yet others are not. Perhaps it has to do with the size of their bank account of love they've built up with the public. Then again, maybe not. Her bank account of love didn't get Paula Deen very far, but there I was watching a football game and a Wrangler ad came on with the wholesome, New Orleans quarterback Drew Brees passing out the advantages to men of Wrangler jeans and their U-shaped crotch, as opposed to the uncomfortableness to men of the V-shaped crotch, neither, of course, comparing to the freedom of frolicking unfettered through the daisies. But there, joining the wholesome Drew Brees was crotch profiler Brett Favre. Before you know it, the next celebrity in Wranglers will be Anthony Weiner. Don't worry, I'm stopping right here. For KSFR, I'm Christopher Hagen.
And with that, we'll conclude today's edition of At Noon, KSFR's extended noon news hour. Dan Garrity with you here at the news desk, with many thanks to my contributing colleagues today, Tom Trowbridge and Charles Maynard. We'll be back tomorrow with more news of and for New Mexico for you, and as always, we hope you join us.